A number of these questions are specifically related to what I've said tonight. Others go a bit wider. So I'll start with the specific ones. And the first question somebody asks, how do you define a species? Now, I made a lot of the fact that species have fixed boundaries. How do we know where a species begins and ends? Practically, we know because the rule is that within a species, all members of that species can interbreed and produce fertile offspring. So you've umpteen kinds of dogs. Dogs will breed with dogs, but they won't breed with cats, etc. Basically, that's the way in which one would recognise and define a species at the outside. Inside, it's defined by the DNA. Another question which deals with the matter of cause and effect. It says, if all effects have causes, who caused God? I should have said probably that within the realm that science deals with, all effects have causes. Within the universe, the created realm, all effects have causes. But God is outside of that. You cannot measure God. You cannot get a tangible hold on God, if I may put it that way. So he doesn't apply. It doesn't fit there. But even if that was not the case, if you take this question further, it leads you nowhere. If, for example, I was to say to you rather facetiously, oh, imagination caused God, you'd then say, well, who or what caused imagination? Or if I said more correctly, necessity caused God, you could then say, who or what caused necessity? You've got to get some primary cause somewhere. And the only place to stop is with God. God doesn't obey the rules of his universe. He makes them. Here's another one that's really a bit outside of where I was tonight, but is certainly relevant. How can a Christian argue against the assumption that radiocarbon dating gives an accurate timeline back in history? And someone else says, can you comment on how the flood has had an effect on the results of carbon dating? Carbon dating is one of several methods that's based on radioactivity. Certain elements decompose at a certain speed. We know the speed at which these atoms are changing. So if we know how fast that's happening, then we can work backwards and see how long it's been happening is sort of the idea. Carbon dating, however, will only take you back several thousand years. No use for giving a date to the age of the rocks, but they do give dates for archaeological specimens back to the time of the flood. But like every other form of dating and every other type of method in science like this, is based on certain assumptions. And you've got to assume that the conditions under which we observe radiocarbon being formed and decaying now in this century is the same in the past 6,000 years or more. And it's kind of the idea I tried to get across to you with my wee 1 centimetre thick book, which we can read and make deductions from. But to carry that story back for even half a metre or more, far less several thousand metres, asks for a lot. So basically what I'm saying is carbon dating does not give you an accurate timeline back into history. Unless, number one, you believe that conditions haven't changed during all these millennia. Or, unless you believe that beyond the realm of carbon dating, going from thousands of years to millions of years, the method still applies. And the point about the flood having an effect on carbon dating has to do with how radiocarbon is formed. It is believed, I think the evidence is pretty clear, that radiocarbon is formed by cosmic rays coming in from outer space to the surface of the Earth and changing carbon in living things. That means you've got to assume that the conditions under which these cosmic rays are arriving at the Earth at this moment have not changed for these thousands of years and haven't changed beyond what the Bible calls the Great Flood, where there is evidence both from geology and archaeology and the Bible that environmental conditions did change dramatically. Basically, that this huge amount of water that fell on the earth at the time of the flood, in pre-flood conditions, shielded the earth from those cosmic rays, and explains, for example, why people lived so long. Also explains why we can't really be sure about taking the radiocarbon dates to before the time of the flood. Some usefulness, it has been backed up by some recent archaeological dates with things that people have dug up, but the percentage error in the method gets bigger and bigger the further back you go. That was radiocarbon dating. The other one that is kind of related is the archaeology fossil study, says this paper, shows linear development of species to species and adaptation over time. I have to say to you, not true. The books sell that story, but the experimental evidence for that is missing. There is no clear factual evidence that, either from archaeology or from the fossil record, there is no clear experimental evidence that there was a linear, gradual development of species into another species. The fossil evidence is rather the opposite. There are none of these linked fossils in between. The fossil record itself is better explained on the flood model I've just referred to, where in the days of the huge flood and the days of Noah, things were changed dramatically, not gradually, but dramatically. So while both these arguments are used by those who will promote the theory of evolution, I think you've got to say to the person who tells you that, are you really sure about that? Have you checked the facts? Because if they did, they would find it doesn't quite tie in. Two more, and I'm finished. Could the speaker say a few words about the Higgs boson? The few words are, I don't know. Well, I don't know much. Safe to say that it's been exploited far beyond what it's intended to be. I mean, the popular press says, this is the God particle. If we find this, we've got it. No such thing. They are, of course, doing very fancy work, some of which I don't understand. But basically, they're tearing atoms apart and trying to find what it is that not only holds atoms together, but holds the components of atoms together. And their idea is, if we can really sort this one out, and Professor Higgs, who I think taught in Edinburgh for a while, he had this idea about 20 years ago. Now they're looking for evidence to back up the theory. Usually people make theories after they get the evidence. This guy had a bright idea, and he's got a theory, and now they're looking for evidence of it. But if they do discover the Higgs boson, what will it mean? Certainly won't mean there's no God. Certainly won't mean that this model of the evolution of the universe is correct. That will just tell us a little bit more about what God did in making these things in the first place. My final question, I think it's the final one, I don't think I missed anyone out. Today's presentation has shown that there are many obstacles to atheism. Thank you if you got that. That was what I wanted to try to show you tonight. But then he goes on to say, or she goes on to say, is it an assumption to say that the God of the Bible overcomes such obstacles? Or is there substantial evidence of it? Part of that I will deal with tomorrow, so please come back tomorrow night and hear what I've got to say. But the main point I want to make on that question is that my view is that the God of the Bible and science fit together better than evolution and science. Evolution theory is, blame me for overstating it if you like, evolution theory is riddled with holes, which science itself is trying to tell them is wrong. Some evolutionary scientists are noting this, not because they're Christians, but because they're looking at the evidence more carefully. But the Bible account of God doing this, setting his creation in motion, as science looks into that, it's simply looking at what God has done and discovering, not necessarily how he did it, but discovering more details of the amazing complexity of it. And the fact that God has given to you and me minds and intellects to grapple with serious, complex problems like that is itself a pointer to God. Because the Bible tells us God made us in his own image. God gave us the ability to think. So we're not part of the animal creation. We're different. He's given us that ability to think. In conclusion, I'll quote to you one other thing. Somebody said, what's the point of astronomy? The answer given was, the point of astronomy is the astronomer. That we have ability to think about these things and try to grapple with the amazing complexity of the universe. I think these are all the questions. If somebody is aware that I haven't read one or the cards got lost, please draw it to my attention. But that's all I've got to say for tonight. Thank you very much indeed.